I want to begin with four verses from Psalm 19 today, and then ask you a question. Psalm 19 reads like this. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of His hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they reveal knowledge. They have no speech. They use no words. No sound is heard from them. Yet their voice goes out into all the earth, their words to the ends of the world. And here's my question. How often in the last week have you stopped to just be joyful about how awesome the world is? Like, have you taken a moment to soak in its beauty, its splendor, its awesomeness? The psalmist says that creation talks about the stunning nature of God without saying a word. So how many times? How many times have you stopped just to breathe in this creation that the psalms so often talk about? Like 10 times? 5 times? 2? 1? Or none? When you read the Psalms, this ancient hymn book of the Jewish people, so many of the 150 songs focus on the joy that is present in the world. The basic worldview of the Psalms seems to regularly return to make the point that everything is pretty amazing in the universe and that we should find joy in that. Take Psalm 104 as an example. The writer begins by saying, "Praise the Lord, my soul. Lord, my God, you are very great. You are clothed with splendor and majesty." And then the psalmist proceeds to start unpacking all of the things that God has done in creation. Clouds, wind, earth, water, thunder, mountains, valleys, springs, ravines, domestic animals, wild animals, birds, mountain rain, grass, plants, food, wine, oil, bread, trees, trees big enough for birds' nests, storks, mountains high enough for goats, crags for rock badgers, the moon, the seasons, the sun, darkness, forest predators, lions, and the ability to work all day. Then he continues to talk about how the earth is full of the effects of God's wisdom. The sea full of creatures, humans that make boats to sail on those seas, sea monsters that scare those humans but play in those waters. And all of it, he says, relies on God, and that is awesome. And so he concludes in verses 33 and 34, "I will sing to the Lord all my life. I will sing praise to my God as long as I live. May my meditation be pleasing to Him as I rejoice in the Lord." Which is to say, all of this brings me joy. Which, of course, you're currently thinking, "Well, yeah, that's pretty much exactly the same as my mindset has been in the last week. I've poured my coffee each morning of lockdown, wandered down the stairs to my basement slash office slash gym slash movie theater slash kids play zone, opened up the tiny window and announced, 'The heavens declare the glory of God and I am full of joy.'" We're all there, right? So here's a different question. How often in the last week have you found time to point out something wrong in the world? I mean, can you count that? Like, can you even remember? Like, why does cynicism ooze out of us so much easier and faster and more often than joy? Like, am I right now opening a teaching about joy and you're thinking, like, with everything going on in the world just now, why is he talking about joy? And at a surface level, you might be right. We're in the midst of a pandemic. It has currently no cure. Its impact on us is multi-leveled. The mental health strain, the economic pressure, the physical impact, the social effect. Like many of you, like me, are in different countries from your whole family and wondering when, and in some cases if, you'll ever get to see some of them again. Parents are facing tough decisions as the new school year approaches. Companies are wondering how they'll survive when government help stops. Families are struggling to stay together after facing, well, so much time together. And it doesn't stop there. Like, we saw the horrendous pictures of devastation in Lebanon this week. Over the past weeks, we've been reminded once again that our world is still stuck in the depth of racism and prejudice. Like, it's ugly. And then this week, as a kind of homage to just how bad 2020 seems to be, Canadians are told of a salmonella outbreak in red onions. Like, seriously, red onions. It's like, okay, God, we've got problems with red onions. Like, when we've got problems with red onions, it kind of feels like we're scraping the bottom of the barrel for 2020 now. And then here comes me, and I want to talk about joy. Like, do we really want to talk about joy? Well, here's the thing. Choosing to be cynical is easy. It's the low-hanging fruit of responses to what's going on in the world right now. Like, go to Facebook and Twitter. It's only a matter of seconds before someone is telling you that everything is terrible. Switch on the news, and it's like, everything's terrible, and here's why, your evening roundup. And we do this countless times in a day. News, Facebook, news, Twitter, on and on. It's like we're being conditioned into cynicism. And it's easy for us. It's kind of lazy if you think about it. Like, if you want to choose a pandemic attitude, fatalistic cynicism is the easiest one. You can choose to believe the conspiracy theories or the disaster stories or whatever else it's going on. Cynicism just comes easily to us all. But the psalmists want to condition us a different way. They want to condition us to choose joy. Ah, we say, well, that's easy for them to say. Well, is it? Like, many of the Psalms are written while facing enemies. Many of them are written after the enemies have conquered and they've been exiled by those enemies. Some of them are written in the devastation of returning home after war. All of them are written in a context where wealth was severely limited and the threat of illness, disease, and death was ever present. And yet, these poets looked at the world and constantly chose joy. Like, and I think what we often do in our contemporary context is view the world in a relatively simplistic way. We see everything in the now and in the present. We assess life on its current impact. It's almost like we look at life on a micro level. We divide our perspectives up into happy and sad. If things are good, then we're happy. And if things are bad, then we're sad. A nice meal, a new watch, a good holiday, all of these things make us happy. But a bad meal, a parking ticket, and work stress, these all make us sad. And then we tend to kind of flip-flop between happy and sad on a regular basis. It's kind of easy to move from happy to sad, and also reasonably and relatively easy to move back again. The Psalms, however, they reject this binary way to look at the world. They want to look for a deeper truth, a deeper magic to how the world is. When they step away from a micro-level way of looking, they step back and look for the big picture, the sense of what's really going on. And then they choose joy. Joy is how they navigate the happy and the sad, the praise and the lament. And this might explain to us actually why so often the Psalms feel just like a little intense when you try and read them. Like, soaring hymns of praise are followed by crippling laments. And modern people read them and feel like we're being tossed around through all of their emotions. Like, I often used to wonder, like, why don't we break the Psalms up into more clearly defined categories? Like, I'd like to read a praise psalm, and know that the next psalm will preserve my mood. But that's not what you get. Look at this way. Psalm 21 is a reflection on the joy found in trusting God. Psalm 22, well, it opens with, my God, why have you forsaken me? And then Psalm 23 is the infamous, the Lord is my shepherd. Joy, forsakenness, and the Lord is my shepherd. We see for the psalmist, joy is not an emotion like happy, where the opposite is sad or mad or some other rhyming words. Joy is deeper than that. Joy is not simply a feeling, but an attitude rooted in the knowledge of who God is and what God does. The problem with moods and feelings, the psalmist is reminding us, is that they're just too short-sighted. They can't see far enough or deep enough. The Psalms want to condition us to choose joy, and they see it everywhere. See, because to live joyfully, we need to choose it. This pandemic, it gives us the opportunity to find joy in deeper places, in places that we've never seen it before. And the psalmists show us how to do this. This is what's going on in Psalm 104. The poet says, I will sing to the Lord all my life. I rejoice in the Lord. But where have they found this joy? Well, that's made clear throughout the whole psalm. It's everywhere. It's in trees, in animals, in birds, in nests, in ships, in wind, in mountains, in... I think you get my point. It's like the psalmist is saying, if you want joy, just open your eyes. It's everywhere. I was running a mountain ridge a few weeks ago, but I chose the wrong shoes, so that when we got to one difficult bit of the ridge, I had a choice. I had to choose between pretty certainly slipping to my death or staying behind while the rest of the group continued the few hundred meters to the top. And I chose life. So I found myself sat on this ridge on my own. Now, my initial feeling was to be a little despondent about this because, well, I hadn't set out that day to not make it to the top. But then I realized that I was sat in a rare moment. Like I was alone near the top of a mountain. Often when I climb mountains, I'm in groups of people for all sorts of reasons, one of them being safety. But here I'm alone at the top of a mountain with a stunning 360-degree view of the Canadian Rockies. And get this, I had a peanut butter sandwich in my running pack. And in a moment of sheer joy-generating awesomeness earlier, I'd also put Nutella on it. And so I sat on this rock alone in the Canadian Rockies with my sandwich. And one thing came to my mind as I looked around this huge panorama, and I think you know what it was, right? It was Psalm 19. The heavens declare the glory of the Lord. And I felt like I had like a front row seat to all of that. And so I sat there with my PBN, you know, peanut butter and Nutella. And I felt like I was sat at God's table. And I was full of joy. And I promise you, like there's not a steak in the world that I would swap for that moment there. Just joy. Another day, I was running down a trail and I encountered a couple of people walking their cat on a leash. Like they were walking on a trail with their cat on a leash. Like that's joy right there. When you love your cat so much that you have to take it on the hike, it's like, honey, if the cat doesn't come with us, it's just not going to be a great day. Like if this day is going to be perfect, like the cat is coming too. And this kind of moment of joy of them walking with their cat also brought joy to my life because I've never seen a cat look so embarrassed in my whole life. The other day there, I saw a video, and it was of a man who wanted to disappoint his toddler and play a trick on her. So what he did was he wrapped her a banana as her Christmas gift. And obviously you can imagine he was filming it to try and see her disappointment at receiving this banana as her Christmas gift. But the film is beautiful because he hands her this banana, this very obviously banana-wrapped present, and she opens it, and as soon as she realizes what it is, she squeals the most joy-filled squeal and shouts, "Banana! I love it! I'm so happy!" Like, maybe it's a banana, or a sunrise, or a walk with your loved one, and your cat. Maybe it's an ice cream, a particular road, the flight of a bird, the few seconds of tension before the roller coaster turns earthbound. Joy is everywhere. I was at a funeral once, and afterwards, friends and family gathered around to mourn and grieve together. You've probably been in a situation like this before. And as the gathering progressed, people started to tell stories. And stories about this loved one now departed. Before long, the stories turned to a particular trajectory. And before long, the tears of sadness had been replaced by tears of joy as people laughed and laughed at the memories of this friend and family member. You see, joy doesn't deny that there's problems, that there's loss, pain, anguish, pandemics. Joy just reminds us that God's world is much, much bigger than that. So you can choose to be cynical and see the negative in everything. But even the cynic really believes in joy. The decision to complain or grump or moan about the way things are comes from a deep-rooted hidden belief in joy, the belief that things should be different than what you can see. See, cynicism is just broken joy. Like, one of the most cynical places in the world is that site called Twitter. Like, all that's grumpy and complained about around the globe makes its way there eventually. From presidents to prisoners, from CEOs to checkout clerks, everyone is on there complaining. If you want to be cynical, you're one click away. But a few days ago on Twitter, someone told a joke. And it was a dad joke. It was like a really corny dad joke. And someone else like saw this dad joke and retweeted it and told their own dad joke. And slowly, kind of like a slow-burning fire, over the next few days, dad jokes started taking over on Twitter. And as you went to your Twitter timeline, in place of cynicism and shouting and rage was dad jokes, and thousands of them. It was like Twitter was so starved of joy that the lowest form of corny humor, the humor that normally you hold your head in your hands and be like, "Dad, don't tell jokes like that," that humor brought life and joy to the place. My friend Phil is a worship leader, and he posted a joke, a dad joke, about worship songs. And within a few days, his joke was liked by 16,000 people, and over 800,000 people had seen this joke. Like the world needs more joy. And so we've got to look around more, because it's everywhere if we'll just see it. In James chapter 1, Jesus' brother says, "Count it all joy, even when we face trials." The great writer, C.S. Lewis, he said that joy is a pointer. Joy points us to something else, something that is beyond us. And I think this is what the psalmists are doing for us in so many of their songs. In Psalm 104 and 19, the poet is pointing. They're saying, look around at all the creation, at everything that God has in his hand. If God is doing all of this, sustaining all of this, feeding all of this, then our present situation, it matters to him. So we can find joy because we matter to God. You can see the big picture when you trust the God that says it all matters. Joy doesn't deny the reality of the world. It just knows that there's more going on than just what we're currently focused upon. Like, God made the world, and He will not abandon it. Like, this is why lament psalms are next to psalms of joy. It's like a confession that the two can coexist, like laughing at a funeral. It's not that we're denying the grief, but there's also a realization that this person's life was so much more than this moment right now. And the world is so much more than this moment right now. It matters to God far beyond and before our lives. So like the psalmist, we lift up our view and see beyond just the present and accept the invitation to joy. Psalm 95 invites us to joy like this. The psalmist says, "Come, let us sing for joy to the Lord. Let us shout aloud to the rock of our salvation. Let us come before Him with thanksgiving and extol Him with music and song. For the Lord is the great God, the great King above all gods. And in His hand are the depths of the earth, and the mountain peaks belong to Him. The sea is His, for He made it." So joy, I think, is transformative. It gets a change agent. It's not insensitive or crass. It's not blind to what's going on or rude. But joy changes us by pointing us to something else beyond us. The Psalms do this by pointing us to the Creator, pointing to how God is beyond the limitations of the situation we find ourselves in right now. An angel comes to Mary one day and says, "I bring you good news of great joy." And everything changed. Like, Jesus showed us quite how much we mattered to God, how much we were valued. At one point in Jesus' life, He turns to plants and birds and He shows us how incredible they are. And then He asks, "How much more valuable are you to God?" Because joy changes our perspective, and joy can change your perspective. It allows you to see beyond where you are at the present. It lets you see further. St. Paul writes to the Corinthians in his second letter, chapter 7, and he says, "In all our troubles, my joy knows no bounds." See, so joy works by leaning into it. It works by seeing it everywhere. It works by, like the psalmist says, declaring the greatness of God, even when you need faith to do that. Joy works by singing those psalms. Joy will change us if we let it. So may you step away from the easy path of cynicism. May you switch off Twitter and tell more jokes. May you find cats on leashes and sandwiches on mountains. May you turn your eyes to the joy that is everywhere. And may you, like the psalmist, say, "If God can do all of this, then I must matter too." And so may you choose joy. And may His grace and peace be with you.